Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, have a couple broader topics we want to touch on tonight, and then we'll have our traditional opponent preview. So why don't we go ahead and get into the newest news of the day, which is have a little more clarity as far as some injuries that are going to impact this team, both for this weekend and for the season that remains. And we can discuss exactly what that is and how that may impact what Florida State does on offense. But before we get into the injuries, want to thank our sponsor, Louisiana Hot Sauce. As always, fantastic product, fantastic people to work with, instrumental in us being able to bring you a podcast like this with the consistency and the frequency that we do. So always ask that you support them on social media or just support them as you make your way through whatever grocery establishment that you may frequent. But again, want to always thank Louisiana Hot Sauce. And Bud, why don't we jump into some injury talk that is not necessarily surprising, but does seem to be continually kind of concentrated on one side of the ball.
Yeah, unfortunately here you have a lot of injuries on offense, Ingram, and maybe the offense's best player, Landon Dickerson, is now going to be out for the year with an ankle injury. We were told this on Monday, and I was working to confirm the exact details because, you know, you never know until they actually go in and do the surgery. The second opinion that he got, they decided they ended up doing surgery. And if you watched him in the Miami game, there were times where he just really couldn't move, and you have to question whether he should have been out there or not. But that sucks. He's one of your best players, man, and now you're not going to have him. That's, you know, a guy who certainly has an NFL future, I think. And so it makes sense for him to go and get that done, especially with kind of how he was playing on one leg. But that's going to hurt the offense for not to have him the rest of the year. We also, you're not going to have Keith Gavin in this game. We know he was off on he walked into the interview room on crutches and then kind of ducked out. I guess he made a wrong turn or something. He wasn't being interviewed that day, but everybody saw him on crutches. Look, I don't think you're going to have Keith Gavin for the next several games, personally. We know he's out for this game.
Yeah,
but
this is not a one-game conversation.
If this is not at least a month, I'm going to be surprised, personally. Maybe you get him back. I don't know. What's the game after Louisville? Syracuse? Or Boston College?
If you're looking at a month, you're looking at Clemson, if you're fortunate.
I think that's got to be the goal, is to get Keith back by Clemson. I mean, if that's reasonable. George Campbell is questionable with the core injury. Look, I mean, that means in some – you're going to have, like, essentially Nyquan Murray and the walk-on Jackson out there. That's not really a great combo. Some DJ Matthews maybe. We know Auden Tate's still really hurt with the shoulder. On defense, Jacob Pugh is going to miss this game, as well as Trey Marshall. Trey Marshall, we previously said, was a concussion. So that's not good. And Pugh apparently is a concussion as well. A lot of really key guys on offense that they're missing, though, man. And some guys on defense who are like pieces, but they're not real essential, which is why, you know, if you're evaluating this team, the defensive rankings are actually better than the offensive rankings. But to be honest, they should be. There's more talent on defense, and the defense is very healthy, very experienced, really talented, and just decent. And that's not good enough. Two seasons in a row to underachieve to that extent on defense, which is why a lot of people want to make a change to defensive coordinator. So I can't believe I just spun the injury report, man, into a, hey, make a change there at DC. But you know, I mean, you look at what sides of the ball they're hurt on and what sides of the ball they're healthy on, kind of stacking up.
It is. Certainly the more impactful, and it seems maybe the injuries with a little longer term to them have almost exclusively happened to the offensive side of the ball. So hate it for Dickerson, a good kid who works pretty hard by all accounts. Probably your most physically gifted offensive lineman, and when healthy, probably your highest performer on that unit. So hadn't had the greatest of times this season, battled through injuries, and not somebody that we will see. You anticipate them sliding left tackle to left guard and then seeing Ball be your left tackle moving forward?
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. You know, Kelly looked okay at left guard when he had to sub in for a minute and bump it. You know, we'll see how Ball plays at left tackle. That's not an easy spot. I think Leonard's been playing okay at right tackle. I don't think you want to move him too much. But, man, we'll have to see if he has confidence. If he doesn't, you know, feel lost there, we'll see.
One other thing that we want to talk about, and we're not going to try to relive the Miami game by any means, but do want to circle back to one or two things before we jump headfirst into Duke. But one or two ideas or sound bites have kind of caught in either of ours' filter as we've gotten kind of further away from the game. And look, I don't want to parse every word that Jimbo Fisher says right now and be super critical of everything just to, you know, have you and I have something that we can complain about and be negative towards. But there is some conceptualization that's been voiced that both of us found kind of disturbing and just kind of from another time almost.
Yeah, this idea, and you'll ask Fisher, why does he do something, right? And inevitably, it'll come down to, I wanted to take the lead. Now look, having a lead is important at the end of the game. Going up 3-0, right, in the first quarter or the second quarter, or really in the third quarter, just to go ahead 3, that's not the goal. The goal is to score as many points as possible when the game is still in the balance. Once you know exactly how many points you're going to need, for instance, like one of the final two drives, perhaps, where a field goal may be appropriate because the game is tied, or you're trying to tie it, or you're trying to take the lead there with very little time left. But if you have certainty of game state, right, that makes sense. It doesn't make sense to play for field goals as often as FSU does. Like this is kind of something I talked about previously. But this, I wanted to take the lead and then inevitably spin it into comments about momentum and confidence. Look, man, you don't get a whole lot of confidence out of going up 3-0. It's like, okay, we got something that drive, whatever. It's not that big of a deal. Your guys are still going to play hard. They're still going to play with confidence, whether you kick a field goal in the first quarter or not. But there's this flawed logic, right? And the problem is when you dictate, let this type of flawed logic and goals dictate how you manage games or mismanage games, as Jimbo so often does, then you're limiting the amount of points you can score. And you're tricking yourself into thinking that you've succeeded here, when in fact the defense is actually pretty happy that you settled for that field goal.
I'm not a huge believer in things like momentum. I may believe in them more than you do per se, but I mean, having the lead in a game, I don't potentially put a whole lot of stock in, unless you're talking about the latter stages of it. Now, if you're talking about maybe having a 2-score lead, like if you had a chance to make it a 9 or 10 point lead going into half, or really at any point in that game, I would have felt that was significant. I don't, like to get into the nebulous too frequently, but that whole game or that whole half, when you're up 3-0, I was basically sitting there waiting for one mistake to happen, and all of a sudden for it to be 7-3, because that's just the way that, one, this season has gone, and two, how that particular series has gone since I can remember. So yeah, if you're talking about being able to have a 2-score lead, change how maybe you're able to play on defense, be more aggressive, then I'm a lot more likely to entertain that conversation. But just the idea that you're going to kick a ball through the uprights and all of a sudden that's going to change the way that your players look at the game, or momentum, or the fact that you are temporary, have more points on the scoreboard than anybody else, that's hard for me to sign off on, that's a particular strong piece of coaching.
Yeah, it's not, but it is very concerning to me that, you know, that Jimbo seemingly thinks of that as a success, when in actuality, I think you can pretty much prove this with analytics, that it's a failure. Field goals are wins for the defense. You're giving defense wins, and you're justifying it as wins for yourself, when it's in fact a loss. So That is concerning that he justifies things like that so often. And we're not talking about just this year. It's just something that it's a little easier to talk about when the coach is losing games. This is stuff we talked about privately for a while.
Absolutely. I believe this is stuff that we've voiced previously on the pod as well, in a public manner once or twice. So, like I said, we're not sitting here trying to relive last Saturday, and we're not wanting to turn this into, you know, some moan fest as far as everything that coaches or head coaches aren't doing that we think is appropriate. But it's just one kind of a final thing that we both talked about earlier today and decided to mention it before we jumped into the Duke game. With that, Bud, why don't we go ahead and look at what promises to be a cracking noon kickoff in Durham, and talk about a little bit about what we might see come Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I got that old 7-point spread on the road again, and over under a 43. So this game kind of projects to be unwatchable. if you're using Vegas really? As a guide, I mean this is really bad. Yeah. Look, okay, let's just start like we normally do. I think this game. Look, if Florida State wins this game, I think you got to be pretty happy. I don't necessarily expect them to go and blow them out. We'll say that right now, but maybe they will. It's certainly possible. Let's start out with what Duke does on offense.
But there's a great, and there's frequently, and not frequently, there's always these pieces on Tomahawk Nation. I'd point people to them where you get somebody in the opposition media and have a nice little back and forth. Somebody on the Tomahawk staff does and enjoyed the look that they did with Duke this weekend and would point people in that direction. But I read that, enjoyed it, and it gave me a better idea. I've seen a little bit of Duke this year, but a better idea as to what they want to do and how maybe they've evolved a little bit in Cutcliffe's time there. And they're never going to be an offense that is confused with something that Chad Morris puts on the field or anything like that, but a decent pace that they try to get and a quarterback that's not a great runner, but certainly somebody that can test you with his legs.
Yeah, Daniel Jones, I mean, seems to be a decent QB, but has kind of not lived up to expectations as much as you would have thought he would this year. Their offense is a little bit similar to Wake Forest, right? They do a little bit less of kind of the orbit stuff that Wake used mm-hmm. to do. They will run a really good number of RPOs. They're a big-time inside zone team, which, you know, that honestly, Florida State typically plays that pretty well. They will try to RPO off that, and they do a pretty good job of trying to, you know, stick the ball in the guy's belly and then pull it out, pitch it over top of the backer's head when he realizes that the backer's been sucked up. So you're going to have good defensive discipline. Now, the one thing is, if your linebackers if your linebackers have a bunch of B stuff in front of them, which Florida State does, and Derek Nnadi and Christmas and Sweat and those guys, it's a little bit easier to play that. So I feel like that's a good advantage Florida State should have. Now, of course, if you play with poor leverage in the secondary, none of that really matters. But yeah, I got to tell you that there's not a lot of talent around Jones, right? Like, this line has played together all year, and now their left tackle's out, but they have not blown open many holes for him, and his receivers this year have just been really underwhelming. I mean, Ingram, their top three receivers per target, 5'8", 6'6", 5'3". That's really not very impressive. And all those guys have, I think, at least 25 targets.
No, that's not maybe reminiscent of a receiver or two that we have on the roster this year as far as what they've done per target. You mentioned the offensive line, a pretty decent unit, maybe losing their best piece this week, a unit that I don't think was ever going to match up particularly favorably with Florida State. But I'm kind of interested to see, one, this matchup, because I think it favors Florida State pretty considerably, but how much the defensive line kind of stays in the game. And I mean, yes, the game this weekend, but also the season as a whole. That, you know, there may be a little bit of strife there between certain aspects of the team or certain aspects of a particular unit. That position's never easy to play, but it's particularly tough to play if full focus, full motivation, or anything else isn't there. So I don't know that all the questions will be fully answered by how they do this Saturday at noon. But if I'm trying to extrapolate anything from the rest of the season, I'm looking for solid, continued, high-level play from the defensive line and a unit that has a chance to not single-handedly win this game, but a unit that has a chance to bottle up Duke's offense and limit them pretty severely.
Yeah, man, Duke's offense has really cratered. I mean, you're looking at 5.2 yards per play against Northwestern, 5 against Baylor, under 5, 4.91 against North Carolina, 3.97 against Miami, and 3.45 against Virginia. So it has literally gone down every single week of the season. They are not playing good football right now. You know, Ingram, one thing that is surprising to me, he's got like a 55% completion percentage on the year. That's really not like, and for a team that's not a great deep throwing team, mm-hmm. you figure he would complete more of these short passes, but he just has not. That is a bit surprising to me. You know, looking at some of their advanced box scores here, I think they had several defensive scores against North Carolina, or at least defensive plays that set up big time scores.
They have one or two of those against Northwestern. Northwestern's probably their high water mark this year.
Oh, they blew Northwestern out. I mean, that was what, 41-17, and then Northwestern actually mm-hmm. turned out to be pretty decent, although it looks like they might have just played a poor game there. They only had 383 yards on 82 plays against North Carolina, which is really not very good. You know, not getting a whole lot of explosion out of the running game, passing game. This offense is just not very good right now. Florida State's defense, with the talent it has, really, I mean, should probably shut them out. Now, I don't know if they will or not. Miami beat them 31-6 at their house. Florida State's defense, I think, is better than Miami's defense. Will they come to play? Will they be motivated? I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to project this team to come out and play like gangbusters after what we've seen this year. I do know that Duke's percentile performance on offense last 3 weeks, higher the better here. 30%, 9%, and 19%. So this offense is just not – Duke's defense is pretty good. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the offense is just not giving them a realistic shot to win.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that stands out to you? I knew Duke loves kind of living off the inside O or inside zone rather, and then incorporating some run pass off of that. But anything else that kind of stands out to you as far as what you've seen through their first five games?
You know, going back to his Tennessee days and even his days at Ole Miss with Eli and certainly now at Duke, Cutcliffe has always wanted to attack the middle of the field using.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
Like not only slants, but also the square ends, right, and the digs. He's big into that. And so that's something that Florida State's going to have to be mindful of. They like trying to stretch the defense at multiple levels, try to get guys out of position there. Florida State's middle of their defense, not the line, but the safeties, have been somewhat vulnerable this year to that. So we'll have to see how Florida State looks to play it. Maybe they'll put Derwin at star. Maybe they'll leave Myers at star. I don't think there's any Braxton Berrios on this team, so that's good. Although, look, as we talked about on the last pod, a lot of that wasn't on Myers, like he's expecting help, or sometimes it was Myers getting beat mentally, not physically, like he would play the wrong leverage or technique. Still not a good thing, but it is somewhat encouraging to me that Myers is not just getting roasted, you know, physically on every snap after review. That was a good thing there. But yeah, look, I think Florida State their defensive line should whip Duke's defensive line or offensive line. I don't think Duke can get the ball downfield very well on them. At least I don't expect it. And if Florida State knows that, maybe they'll get some turnovers from some tip balls or something like that. They certainly never seem to trick anybody under Charles Kelly, unfortunately. But I think they should really have a big day if they come out motivated and focused, which is hard to ask after the Miami game with the hangover potential there. They should have a really big day against Duke's offense because this is not a good offense. I mean, 3 straight weeks in a row against lesser talent than FSU. And they've not done anything.
Switching over to the other side of the ball, we will take a look at what Florida State does against Duke's defense. But before we do that, let's thank our friends at Madison Social and all of the entities that make up the For the Table restaurant group. We've mentioned this a couple times, but Soto has recently been brought online. Heard nothing but fantastic, very positive remarks as to what that space brings to the Tallahassee scene. Certainly a little bit of a different look than their first three properties, but just a ton of different options. Nobody has their pulse on kind of the finger, or their finger rather, on the pulse of the local scene and just kind of interwoven into the fabric of the sports teams and the university itself than For the Table. So they've been great partners to us. Want you to always consider them. Look, everybody is impacted by this football team in some way or another, particularly when you're in a town like Tallahassee. So just make an effort, go by, see those people in a season like this. Every visit, every beer you can have, every hamburger or hot dog that can be enjoyed is a great way to support the Nolcast, and it's also a great way to support a local business that goes over and beyond when it comes to being a positive asset and a positive force, both on Florida State and the local community.
Yeah, dude, it's a great spot, and they're great sponsors for us. It's all the more important to support them in a rough year. You know, those are guys that keep the podcast going, and it's a great product as well. It's not some charity case. It's a place I actually enjoy going. You know, we don't do endorsements from stuff we don't use, and we really do like Mad So Townships and Trolley and now Soto as well, which is getting awesome reviews, and that's a really good thing. So very appreciative of having them.
We turned down sponsors for about 3 or 4 years before we were able to find a decent pairing, and are thrilled to be able to do it. One thing that I am fairly certain of is that Mad So, our For the Table restaurant group, but in this case Mad So, doesn't sponsor Andy Staples, and I mention that because there is a fantastic little mention in his most recent article about what Mad So is, and would just encourage people to take a look at that from a non-biased third party.
There you go. Nice job, man.
Absolutely. He had a strong positive experience when visiting Madison Social recently. Bud, what does Duke do on defense, and how, if at all, they have a little bit of similarity to what we saw last Saturday with Miami?
Okay, so they are pretty blitz happy. They have a very aggressive defensive front. That's not huge. I mean, they're not, you know, quite as big as, like, let's say, Bama or NC State. They look to shoot gaps, which is kind of like Wake. Florida State had a little trouble with that, if you recall, to the tune of 17.
One or two tackle for losses stand out.
One or two times eight plus one. So they do a lot of that. They are very experienced up front. I mean, you look at who they have up front. I mean, they're linebacker, sophomore, linebacker, junior. Defensive tackle is a senior, D end, sophomore, junior, D tackles. They're not using a whole lot of freshmen. That's pretty obvious. Their linebackers are very active. Joe Giles Harris has already 14 run stuffs this year. Ben Humphreys has 8. So those are guys that really trigger very quickly when they see the run. Now, Florida State has got to figure out a way to counter that. A lot of teams actually will use something called an RPO, Ingram. Have you heard about this?
I've heard that. Heard one or two people in the college football landscape mention these things before.
I've heard it's witchcraft and not pure football.
Yeah, it is the devil incorporating himself into the sport, definitely.
Now, if you felt like that was just too extreme for you, you might want to try like a bootleg or maybe a waggle or some kind of play action pass to where if those linebackers trigger that happy downhill, or maybe they're on a run blitz, maybe you can get outside the pocket and hit a crossing route or something on a big play. You're certainly going to have some inexperienced receivers with you in this ballgame. Also, those guys are very aggressive, and you can hit some backs out of the backfield against them. I know that Miami got Mark Walton singled up on one of the linebackers quite a few times, and he had a number of nice catches and, you know, catch and run stuff in that game. I think Duke's defense is better than they showed against Miami. Miami just had a bunch of receivers make really nice plays in that game. And then after that, Duke kind of shut them down. You know, Miami did win 31-6, but if it can be a little closer than 31-6, it kind of was. This is not going to be an easy thing because this is a veteran experienced defense. They're very aggressive. The key is going to be hitting the big play. We talked about this last week, and Florida State didn't hit enough big plays, but they managed to run the ball pretty well. I think you can have some success running against Duke. Duke might be a little bit more disciplined than Miami was. Miami was very aggressive as far as gaps and whatnot. Florida State also got away with some holding in that game, as did Miami. They called that pretty loosely. We'll see how the game is called against Duke. But one of the big things, again, is going to be taking advantage of that linebacker aggressiveness.
I know their backers are aggressive, and that's certainly something that we saw last week as well. The wide receivers, that is one place on the offense that seems to be having a little bit of concentration of injuries. Gavin, we mentioned, don't plan on seeing him for a bit. Tate, I would love to think that we could sit Auden Tate for a game and maybe give him a little bit more time to rest up that an AC joint or whatever it is that's tied to the appeared to originally potentially be a broken collarbone, but whatever it is that he's going through medically. George Campbell has an issue with his core, which is not something that really goes away. You're going to see Nooney. You're going to see the walk-on that we've gotten familiar with. And then who knows what's from there. I know Fisher's mentioned DJ Matthews a couple times. It'd be nice to see that kid get involved, maybe feel a little more comfortable with his role in the program. But what exactly do you expect to see from Florida State's offense? Now, look, they're probably going to try to run the ball. It would be wise for them to run the ball in a formidable fashion. But how much do you see the passing game getting involved? And maybe more importantly, who is it that's there with that involvement?
So this is the troublesome part here, because normally my answer would be, well, let's go more two tight end, right? You got Ryan Izzo, and you got Maven Saunders, with the exception that every time they put Saunders in there, even though he's a fourth-year guy, they've not developed him enough. He can't block. It's like he melts down and just lets a guy run right by him to the inside. It's, you know, I feel bad for the kid. He's a really nice guy, and it just I don't know what the deal is there. Maybe you got to use him more. Maybe you got to split him out and use him as a receiver, or, you know, get creative and do a better job of utilizing your strengths while minimizing your weaknesses. Okay, he can't block with his hand on the ground. Well, you're down to some scholarship or some non-scholarship receivers, some walk-ons. Maybe try Saunders out at receiver a little bit or something. You know, that's potentially an angle there, because you're not going to have Keith Gavin. I don't know how much you're going to have Auden Tate. Maybe some more pony package. I think that's something you could look at with two running backs, or maybe go more gun with Vickers and Patrick, or Vickers and Akers, or Patrick and Akers. One tight end and two receivers. That's That's fine by me. I mean, if I'm Duke and I see these guys out for Florida State on the edge, I'm definitely trying to load up the box against the run. So you're gonna have to try and create some play action shots to get some people open. I'm not sure how much these walk ons are gonna beat Duke's corners. Or hey, you know what might work, man? There's a guy named Noonie Murray on this team who pretty rarely gives good effort, but maybe if they're like, hey, help us, Noonie, your only hope, to quote Star Wars. Maybe he can wake up and actually mm-hmm. give consistent effort and, you know, make people on this team like him again.
You would think he's going to get a decent number of targets in this game nothing else other than necessity, and is really one of the only scholarship options that is immediately available. So, Noonie, love to see the trajectory of your 2016 season mirror what we have in 2017. I have my doubts as to how much he ultimately gets involved, but if ever there's going to be a game where he would be a focal point of the offense and maybe satiate his own desire to have a decent amount of reps thrown his way, tough to find a better situation where that could potentially come to fruition.
The other thing I do think, man, is this. Assuming this is going to be a somewhat low-scoring game, just keep giving the ball to Cam Akers. I really think if he gets 20 touches, or if the backs get 30 something touches between them, don't you just feel like they're going to break one or two?
Akers reminds me of a power hitter who just keeps fouling balls off right into the screen behind home plate. He's just barely missing that one long run, and damn near had it twice, maybe three times against Miami, but. You get the feeling that it's only a matter of time until Akers takes a 68-yard run to the house or something like that.
You also can't get discouraged if you end up in second and 12 because Duke shoots a gap. And they try to get a lot of tackles for loss early on in downs. Now, the flip side of that is you're going to hit them with some explosive plays. It's a trade-off Duke makes. It's a trade-off that you have to accept and capitalize on. This may be a game where Florida State wins, maybe comfortably, and where they give up double-digit tackles for loss. That's just how Duke wants to play. And to be honest, with Florida State's injured up offensive line at this point, that may just be how the result is. The key is not in avoiding the tackles for loss as much as it is countering those with using their aggressiveness against them and hitting those big explosive plays. That's what you got to do.
Anything else you feel like we need to remark on, Bud, or you could move into the prediction phase of the podcast?
I think half an hour of Duke talk is probably good enough for everybody. I mean, this is
we are legitimately walking a thin line of trying to.
Have you looked at the schedule this weekend, by the way?
I have. It's tough, man. There's nothing out there that I really yearn to watch. It's a tough weekend.
I told my wife, I said, "Hey, what are you doing Saturday night?" And she's like, "I don't know. Aren't you working?" I was like, "Honestly, no, there's not a game this weekend I want to watch after 3:30, right? I mean, 3:30 we have, you know, she's an LSU grad, so she wants to watch Auburn with them. Okay, whatever. And then Miami plays Georgia Tech, and then you got Oklahoma Tech. So there's a pretty nice little 3:30 window there. You know, if you're a real degenerate, there's some stuff there at 3:30. But man, after that, like, what's your best 7 o'clock game? You like UTEP Southern Miss or? Maybe Arkansas going to get brained by Alabama or Missouri at Georgia. Ohio State's laying 24 on the road at Nebraska. That's interesting. Utah probably without their quarterback going to play USC. You got Washington laying 17 on the road at Arizona State. Oregon without their quarterback going to Stanford. You can just miss me with all this stuff. I'm like, let's go out. So if you have not done the foresight here, and you're a person who normally watches like 10, 12 hours of college football.
Yeah,
you got a spouse
to earn some points here.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. I am earning some points on Saturday for sure. So after about 7 o'clock, no more football for me.
There you go. This weekend, Bud, I don't know. I've kind of waffled back and forth. Ultimately, I think Florida State wins this game. Certainly. I really don't want to do a podcast after Florida State loses again, so please let's give us a breather on that. I, in my mind, have something like 21-9. This is not going to be a pretty game, not going to be a whole lot of fun to watch, but that is kind of where I am with this game right now.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go – I think I'm going to just go 20 to 13. But that's too low. I know they're the problem is with all these injuries on offense for FSU with Duke's inept offense, the scoring is just going to be a little bit higher because you got to figure there's going to be some turnovers or some really bad field position that gets converted into something. So I'm going to say, and also I don't trust this defensive coaching staff. So I'm going to revise my pick and I'm going to say Florida State 23, Duke 17. So Florida State wins by 6.
Mm. Sounds like a nervous game, which I almost anticipate. And in my own little 21-9, I don't have it as a real cakewalk either. But we'll see, man. Look, just go up there and get a win, please. Let's start to try to move away from the bowl eligibility conversation. That would be a nice step in the right direction if you go up to Durham and get a win and just see where the rest of this season takes us. It's certainly had its low points. Nothing, in my opinion, that is on the schedule can redeem or save the season. But it could certainly not go the worst path possible. And a win this weekend would be a nice step in that direction. So, Bud, here is to hearing an instant reaction podcast from you on Saturday where you get to actually look back and review a win. Here's us being able to record a podcast on Monday. That is perhaps a little bit more in a positive light, and we'll move on to kind of the second stage of the season and hope it has a better ending to it than what we've witnessed so far.
All right, man. I will talk to you on our next show.
Absolutely. Thank you to the listeners. Know that this always hasn't been the most enjoyable season to follow, but we are honored by how many people are listening, how many people have shared this, how much some of the ideas that are presented in this podcast have made their way into the general conversation of the fan base. We just ask that you continue to share this podcast with your friends if you feel appropriate. Any kind of support that you feel comfortable giving us on social media is always appreciated, and we look forward to talking to you on Saturday and then again first of next week.
This concludes this episode of the Nolcast. Make sure to rate, review us on Apple Podcasts, write us at thenolcast@gmail.com, or tweet us at Nolcast. 31-17 is my prediction for a Noles victory. I think Cam's going to have a coming out party. Maybe 110 yards, maybe 2 touchdowns. Patrick gets in there for one. Blackman throws for one. We get a field goal. That'll be 31 points right there. The defense is hungover in multiple senses of the word, though, so I think they're going to give up a few too many points to a so-so offense. But what do I know? Today's date is October 13th, 2017. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.